answered my question, or at least not provided the information I wanted. Did you mention anything to Rosie about what Lydia said concerning my capabilities as a parent? I said. I don't remember Lydia saying anything about that. What did she say? I stopped myself just in time. These paintings are so interesting. Judy obviously did not notice the change in topic. I was getting better at it. I returned home at 6:43 p.m., having purchased a single, high-quality red rose, indicating 1 year of marriage, on the way. As I opened the door, it occurred to me that Rosie might have organized the Eslers to remove me from the house while she prepared some sort of surprise. I was right, and my worst fears were realized. Rosie was in the kitchen. She was cooking, or at least preparing food, or attempting to prepare food. On our first date, Rosie had confessed that she could not cook to save her life, and I had seen no evidence to contradict this. The scallops on the night of the orange juice incident, when I was unavailable due to meltdown and then sex, were the most recent culinary disaster. As I headed to the kitchen to deliver advice and render assistance, Gene emerged from his room and pushed me back out of the door, which he closed behind us. You were about to help Rosie out in the kitchen, am I right? Correct. And you would have started by saying, do you need any help, darling? I reflected for a few moments. In reality, I would have assessed the situation and determined what needed to be done, as would be appropriate for a qualified person arriving at the scene of an accident. Jean spoke before I had formulated a response. Before you do anything, think about which is more important, the quality of one meal or the quality of your relationship. If the answer is the second, you're about to have one of the great meals of your life, prepared without any assistance from you. Naturally, my focus had been on the meal, but I could see the logic of Jean's argument. Nice work with the rose, said Jean. We walked back inside. You guys okay? Asked Rosie. Of course, I said, and gave her the rose without comment. Don had dog crap on his shoe. I saved the carpet, said Jean. Rosie instructed me to dress formally, which meant wearing my collared shirt and my non-bushwalking jacket. The leather shoes would also be required. I assumed we were eating at home, I said from the bedroom. Jean came in again. I'm going out now. Dress as if you're going somewhere with a dress code. Do whatever you're told. Express unalloyed joy at everything. Reap the rewards for decades. I located my formal clothes. Go out on the balcony, called Rosie. I had retreated to my office where the opportunities to cause relationship damage were minimized. Rationally, the worst that could have happened was poisoning, resulting in a slow and agonizing death for both of us. I started again. Statistically, the most likely outcome was an unpalatable meal. I had eaten plenty of those, some, admittedly, as the result of errors on my part. I'd even served such failures to Rosie, but I was still irrationally tense. It was 7:50 p.m. Rosie had put out a small table, one of the surplus items of furniture that lived in her study, and set it in a restaurant style for two people. I estimated the temperature at 22 degrees Celsius. There was plenty of light. I sat. Then Rosie appeared. I was stunned. She was wearing the amazing white dress that she'd used only once before, on the occasion of our marriage. Unlike the stereotypical wedding dress, it was, to use a technical term, elegant, like a computer algorithm that achieved an impressive outcome with just a few lines of code. The impression of simplicity was enhanced by the deletion of the veil that she had worn 12 months earlier. You said you could never wear that dress again, I said. I can wear what I like at home, she said, in direct contradiction to the instructions she had given regarding my own costume. It's a bit tight. She was correct about the tightness, which was primarily in the upper region. The effect was spectacular. It took me a while to realize that she was holding two glasses. In fact, I did not notice until she handed one to me. Yes, mine's got champagne in it too, she said. I'm just going to have a little, but I could have a whole glass with virtually zero risk to the baby, Henderson Graham Brocklehurst, 2007. She smiled widely and raised her glass. Happy anniversary, Don. This is how it started, remember? I had to think hard. Our relationship had developed significantly on our earlier visit to New York, but we had not had dinner on a balcony. Of course. She was referring to the balcony dinner at my Melbourne apartment on our first date. It was a brilliant idea to reproduce it. I hoped she had not attempted the lobster salad. It was critical not to overfry the leeks or they would become bitter. I stopped myself. Instead, I raised my own glass and said the first words that came into my mind. To the world's most perfect woman. It was lucky my father was not present. Perfect is an absolute that cannot be modified, like unique or pregnant. My love for Rosie was so powerful that it had caused my brain to make a grammatical error. We drank champagne and watched the sun go down over the Hudson River. Rosie brought out tomato slices with buffalo mozzarella, olive oil, and basil leaves. They tasted exactly as they should, possibly better. I was conscious of smiling.
Pretty hard to screw up stacking cheese slices and tomato, said Rosie.
Don't worry, I haven't tried anything too tricky.
I want to sit out here with you and watch the lights and talk.
Are there any particular subjects you plan to discuss? I asked.
There's one, but I'll get to it. It'll be nice just to talk. But let me get the next course. Prepare not to freak out.
Rosie returned with a plate covered in thin slices of something with a sprinkling of herbs. I looked more closely. Tuna! Sashimi tuna! Raw tuna! Raw fish was, of course, on the banned substances list. I did not freak out. A few seconds of reflection revealed that Rosie, in an act of selflessness, had prepared my favorite food, even though she could not share it with me. I was about to express my thanks when I saw that she had brought two pairs of chopsticks. I could feel a freak-out building.
I told you not to freak, she said. You know what's wrong with raw fish? It might make me sick, like you said. Like it can any time, pregnant or not, never has. But it won't directly harm the fetus in the way that toxoplasmosis or listeria would. Mercury is a risk, but not in this quantity. Tuna is a good source of omega-3 fatty acids, which are correlated with higher IQ. Hibben et al., Maternal Seafood Consumption in Pregnancy and Neurodevelopment Outcomes in Childhood, The Lancet, 2007, and its bluefin. A few grams once in a lifetime can't hurt the planet too much. She smiled, lifted a slice of tuna with her chopsticks, and dipped it in the soy sauce. I was right. I had married the world's most perfect woman. Rosie's prediction that it would be nice to talk was correct. We talked about Jean and Claudia and Carl and Eugenie and Inga, about Dave and Sonia and what we would do when our pseudo-lease expired. George had promised me 3 months' notice. No conclusions were reached, but I was conscious that Rosie and I had not scheduled sufficient time for talking since we'd arrived in New York and become busy with work. Neither of us raised the topic of pregnancy, in my case since it had been the source of recent conflict. Rosie's reason may have been the same. At intervals, Rosie went to the kitchen and returned with food. In every instance, competently executed. We had fried crab cakes and then the main course, which Rosie retrieved from the oven. Striped bass en papillote, she said, which is to say in paper, since this is our paper anniversary. Incredible. You solved the problem and the result is disposable. I know you hate clutter, so we'll just have the memory.
Rosie waited while I tasted it.
Okay, she said.
Delicious.
It was true. So, she said, that brings me to the one thing I wanted to say. It's nothing dramatic. I can cook. I'm not going to cook every night, and you're a better cook than I am, but I can follow a recipe if I need to. If I screw up occasionally, no big deal. I love everything you do for me. But I also want you to know that I'm not helpless and incompetent. That's really important to me.
Rosie took a sip from my wine glass and continued her speech.
I know I'd do it to you too. Remember the night I left you at the cocktail bar and was worried you wouldn't cope without me and you were fine, right?
I must have been too slow to hide my expression.
What happened? She said.
There was no reason now, 7 weeks later, to hide the story of Loud Woman and the consequent loss of our jobs. I related the story and we both laughed. It was a huge relief.
I knew something had happened, said Rosie. I knew you'd been hiding something. You shouldn't ever worry about telling me stuff.
It was a critical moment. Should I tell Rosie about the playground incident and Lydia? Tonight she was relaxed and accepting. But perhaps tomorrow morning she would begin worrying and stress would replace her happy mood. The threat of prosecution was still present. Instead, I took the opportunity to explore a lie by a third party. When Jean said I had dog feces on my shoe, did you believe him?
Of course not. He dragged you outside to tell you not to get in my face in the kitchen, or to give you the flour to give to me, right?
The first one. I purchased the flour independently. I would, of course, have been fooled had I been in Rosie's position, but I was not surprised that she had detected Jean's lie.
Do you think Jean knew that he had failed to deceive you? I asked. I think so. It's not like I don't know the two of you. So why did he bother inventing a lie that no one would believe and that made no difference to anyone's feelings? Just trying to be nice, she said. I guess I appreciated the effort. Social protocols. Unfathomable. It was my turn to deliver a surprise. I walked inside. Jean was back and he had helped himself to some of the surplus champagne in the refrigerator. I returned to the balcony and pulled Rosie's mother's ring from my pocket. I took Rosie's hand and put it on her finger, as I had done with another ring on this date a year earlier. In keeping with tradition, I put it on the same finger. The theory is that the eternity ring symbolically prevents the removal of the wedding ring. This seemed to be consistent with Phil's intent. It took Rosie a few seconds to recognize the ring and begin crying, and in that time Jean had thrown the full box of confetti over us with one hand and taken multiple photographs with the other. Chapter 18. A communal meal was scheduled for Tuesday evening. I reminded Rosie in the morning, as I suspected, her unreliability at keeping appointments had been exacerbated by pregnancy. "Don't you forget," she said. "I've got the sonogram booked today." Problems had accumulated. I had made a list of 8 critical items. 1. The Jean relocation problem. Obviously, Jean needed to participate in this discussion. 2. The banned substances list. I'd left it on Rosie's desk, but she had not indicated her formal approval. 3. Rosie's problem with leave from the medical program. This needed to be resolved as quickly as possible in the interests of certainty. 4. An exercise regimen for Rosie, outstanding after the failure of the swimming program. 5. Rosie's thesis, behind schedule and in danger of interfering with other activities. 6. The Jean and Claudia marriage problem. I had made no progress and needed Rosie's help. 7. The Carl and Jean issue. Jean needed to talk to Carl. 8. Direct action on Rosie's stress. Yoga and meditation are widely recognized as promoting relaxation. Just making the list gave me a feeling of significant progress. I gave printed copies to Jean and Rosie as they sat down to dinner. Wild caught prawns followed by low mercury grilled fish with a salad featuring the absence of alfalfa shoots. Rosie's reaction was not positive. "Fuck, Don. I've got 2 weeks to finish my thesis. I don't need all this." There was silence for approximately 20 seconds. "Looking at this list," Jean said, "it seems like I've been contributing to item 8. I've been so occupied with young Carl's difficulties that I've been inconsiderate of you. I didn't realize you were under so much pressure with the thesis." "What do you think I've been doing in my study all the time? Why do you think I have no life? Don didn't tell you I was behind?" The words were aggressive, but I recognized a conciliatory tone. "Not really, no. It seems you and Don have got a lot to talk about. With leave and exercise and banned substances. I'll grab a burger and start looking for somewhere to live tomorrow." Rosie had what she wanted, but inexplicably refused it.
No, sorry. Have dinner with us. We'll talk about the food and exercise stuff some other time."
"We need to discuss it now," I said.
"It can wait," said Rosie. "Tell us about Carl, Jean."
"Oh, he blames me for the split."
"If you could have your time again," said Rosie.
"I wouldn't change it for Claudia, but if I'd known how it would affect Carl..."
"Unfortunately, the past is not changeable," I said, wanting to bring the conversation back to practical solutions.
"Acknowledging your regret may help," said Rosie.
"I doubt it'll be enough for Carl," said Jean.
At least we had addressed, if not resolved, one item on the agenda. I made a point of checking it off on both of their copies. We made no further progress with the list. Rosie produced a large envelope from her bag and gave it to Jean.
"This is what I did this afternoon."
Jean pulled a sheet from the envelope and passed it immediately to me. It was a sonogram picture, presumably of Bud. To a non-expert, it was indistinguishable from the pictures in The Book, which I was very familiar with. It was less clear than the sketch I had added to the week 12 tile 5 days earlier. I passed it back to Rosie.
"I guess you've seen it already," said Jean.
"No, he hasn't," said Rosie. She turned to me. "Where were you at 2 p.m. today?"
"In my office reviewing a research protocol for Simon Lefevre. Is there a problem?"
"Did you forget about the sonogram?"
"Of course not."
"So why weren't you there?"
"I was expected to attend."
It would have been interesting, but I could see no role for myself. I had never attended a medical appointment with Rosie before, nor she with me. In fact, she had had her first medical appointment with the OBGYN the previous week, where she presumably received an initial briefing on the conduct of the pregnancy. If I was to attend any appointment, this was surely the most relevant in ensuring that we had the same information. Yet I had not been invited. The sonogram was a procedure involving technicians and technology, and I was conscious from experience that professionals like to work without the presence of onlookers who ask distracting questions. Rosie nodded slowly.
I tried to call, but your phone was off. I thought you might have had an accident or something, but then I remembered that I'd only told you the time and the place twice and hadn't actually said, use that information to get yourself there.
It was generous of Rosie to take the blame for the misunderstanding. Were there any faults? I asked. At almost 13 weeks, the sonogram would be able to pick up neural tube deficits. I had assumed that in keeping with normal protocols, Rosie would have informed me if there had been a problem, just as she would have informed me if she had lost her phone on the subway. The book had implied that abnormalities were statistically unlikely. In any case, there was zero I could do until an issue was identified.
No, there are no faults. What if there were?
It would depend on the nature of the fault, obviously.
Obviously.
Good news, then, said Jean. Some of us imagine every possible scenario and some of us cross the bridge when we come to it, like Don.
I've got another item, said Rosie. I forgot to tell you. I've got a study group tomorrow night. Here.
The semester hasn't started, I said. You need to focus on your thesis.
The thesis is screwed. I'm not going to get it done in 10 days.
It'll be all right, said Jean. I'll organize an extension.
Rosie shook her head. This is Columbia. They have rules.
For ordinary mortals, relax.
Rosie did not look relaxed.
I talked to someone in admin. She wasn't exactly helpful.
Jean smiled.
I've already spoken to Borenstein. As long as it's in by the start of your clinical year, you'll be fine.
The study group meeting would be a major disruption to my schedule, but Rosie was overloaded. I needed to be supportive during this challenging time of change for both of us, as recommended by the book. I'll scale up dinner.
How many people?
Don't worry, we'll get pizza. One night won't hurt. I'm not worried. I can easily cook a vastly superior meal.
Maybe you guys could have your night out tomorrow.
That's a more serious disruption to the schedule than multiplying the dinner.
It's just your faculty, and it's the first time they've been here. They've never met you.
Obviously, there has to be a first meeting. I can meet them all together.
They're strangers. You don't like meeting strangers.
Medical students, almost scientists, pseudoscientists. I can have fascinating arguments with them.
Which is why I'd rather you went out, please.
You think I'll be annoying?
I guess I just want my own space.
It's fine, said Jean. I'll look after Don.
Rosie smiled. Sorry to spring it on you. Thanks for the understanding. She was looking at Jean. George called as Jean and I were leaving for the bar the following evening.
Don, do you want to come up here instead? We can send out for pizza. I've got a few things I want to throw at Jean Genie.
I called Dave. If George was paying and we could watch the baseball, location was of minor importance. During the seventh inning stretch, George turned to Jean.
I've been thinking about what you said about genetics. Quite a bit, actually. It still doesn't explain why one of my sons is a drug addict and two aren't.
Two words. Different genes. I can't know for sure, but I'd guess he got an overdose of genes that tell his body to keep doing what feels good. Fine in an environment without pharmaceuticals.
George sat back and Jean continued. All of us are programmed, genetically programmed, to keep doing what's worked for us and to avoid things that didn't work.
Ayahuasca, said George. Tried once, never again.
Most of the time, what we do works well enough. So here's a principle that most psychologists would agree with, but that comes straight out of genetics. People repeat themselves. I asked the obvious question. How do they know what to do the first time? They copy their parents. In the ancestral environment, they were, by definition, successful people. They'd succeeded in breeding. If you want to understand individual human behavior, the magic words are repeating patterns.
Tell me about it, said George.
I'm a drummer, repeating patterns. Same song, same boat, same journey.
Why do you continue? I asked.
Now there's a good question, said George. When I got this apartment, I had an idea I'd move here, find somewhere that'd give me a solo gig once a week. I'd play a bit of guitar, get back to writing my own stuff. Every year I promised myself I'll do it, and every year I'd get back on that bloody boat. He put his beer glass down. You gents want to switch to wine? I bought a case of Chianti. George fetched a bottle of Sassicaia 2000, which is not technically Chianti, but from the same region. Jesus, said Jean, a bit good for pizza. World's best pizza, I said, to clarify, and everyone laughed. It was a minor but notably good moment, and I was sorry Rosie was not sharing it with me. George was looking for a corkscrew without success. There was a simple solution. I'll get mine. My cork extractor, selected after a significant research project, would be equal or superior to any George might own. I went downstairs and opened the door to the apartment, expecting to find it full of medical students. The living room was empty. Rosie was in the bedroom, asleep. The light was on, and a novel was open on the bed. On the floor was a single, small pizza box. The receipt was stuck on the top. $14.50, Meat Lovers Special. Chapter 19. Is there some problem? I asked Rosie the next morning.
I was going to ask you the same thing, she said. You're in the bathroom for over an hour.
Copying the sonogram picture of Bud onto tile 13 had been more difficult than reproducing a line diagram from the internet, but it seemed sensible to use the actual picture. Rosie was right. It would have been interesting to watch the moving scan. No problem, I said, maintaining the wall tiles. I'd also been analyzing the meat pizza incident. I saw five possibilities. One, Rosie's study group had eaten the pizza. That did not explain the box being in the bedroom. Two, Rosie was having an affair with a carnivore. That would explain the location of the box, but surely they would have hidden the evidence. Three, the box was mislabeled and actually contained a vegetarian pizza. Four, a meat pizza had been delivered in error. Rosie had discarded the meat and eaten a remaining pizza. The theory was plausible, but there was no sign of meat in the bin. Five, Rosie had violated her practice of sustainable pescatarianism. This seemed highly unlikely, although there was a recent precedent in her eating a small quantity of Jean's and my steak meal. Incredibly, the highly unlikely option was the correct one. There had been no study group meeting. Rosie had just needed a bit of space. She'd lied to me rather than make a straightforward request, and she had ordered a meat pizza. I could not blame her for dishonesty. I was guilty of a far greater ongoing deception about the Lydia situation for much the same reasons, to protect Rosie from distress and both Bud and her from the harmful effects of excess cortisol. Rosie had not wanted to hurt me by saying she didn't want me in the apartment with her. There were numerous alternative solutions I could have presented and would have. Perhaps she had chosen to lie rather than listen to them. It seemed that Jean was right. Dishonesty was part of the price of being a social animal, and of marriage in particular. I wondered if Rosie was withholding any other information. The vegetarian violation was more interesting.
I just felt like meat. I got them to hold the salami, she said.
I suspect a protein or iron deficiency.
It wasn't a craving, I just decided to do it. I'm so over being told what to do. You know why I'm a pescatarian?
Sustainable pescatarianism had been one of the initial conditions of the Rosie package, known to me from the day we met. I had accepted the package in its entirety, in direct contrast to the philosophy of the Wife Project, which had focused on aggregating individual components. I assume health reasons.
If I was that worried about my health, I wouldn't have been a smoker. I'd go to the swimming pool and sustainability wouldn't matter.
You don't eat meat for ethical reasons.
I try to do the right thing by the planet. I don't impose my views on other people. I watch you and Jean scoff down half a cow and I don't say anything. I've at least got the excuse of eating for a second person.
Perfectly reasonable. Protein? Fuck protein.
Fuck people telling me what to eat and when to exercise and how to study and to go to yoga, which I'm doing with Judy anyway. And no, it's not Bikram yoga. It's the right sort of yoga for pregnancy. I can work that out for myself.
I suspected that people was an incorrect use of the plural form, but it was better than Rosie saying, fuck you, which was obviously what she meant. I offered an explanation. I'm attempting to assist with the baby production process. You didn't appear to have time to do the necessary research due to your thesis and the unplanned nature of the pregnancy.
I could have added that I'd been told to do this by Lydia and Sonia, a professional and a fellow pregnant woman, and would not have done it without such direction, but that would have involved disclosing my deception. Deception had got me into trouble. It was hardly a surprise. I could have added that I had made no major recommendations about food or exercise or study since the anniversary meal, which represented a high point in our relationship. Why was Rosie becoming upset now?
I get that you were trying to help, she said. I really do. But let's get this straight. My body, my work, my problems. I'm not going to get smashed. I won't eat salami, and I'll get there on my own way.
She walked towards her study and indicated that I should follow. From her bag, she retrieved the book.
This is the book you've been reading, she asked.
Obviously, I hadn't noticed it was missing.
You could have saved yourself a few bucks and taken my copy. It's a bit basic for me. I'm onto it, Don.
You require zero assistance.
Keep doing what you were doing. Go to work. Eat cow. Get drunk with Jean. Stop worrying. We're doing okay.
I should have been pleased with the outcome. I was relieved of responsibility at a time when I had plenty of other things to worry about. But I'd been working hard at building empathy for Rosie, and now I had a vague sense that despite her words, she was not happy with me. Her solution to the diet issue, in fact all pregnancy issues that I had seen as joint projects, was to proceed alone. At least I had clear direction for the follow-up meeting with Lydia.
You're over-functioning, said Jean. You know what my doctor said about that book you've been reading?
Give it to someone you hate.
All that obsessing and the difference you make, the outcome is negligible compared to the big game.
It was our second boys' night out in 5 days, encouraged by the proximity of George's baseball-watching and drinking facility. Rosie had not objected.
And the big game is, said George.
You've heard me before, said Jean.
Genes are destiny. You guys make your biggest contribution when you supplied a bit of your DNA.
It was obvious Dave disagreed.
All the books say that genes are just a start. Parenting makes a big difference, he said.
Jean smiled.
They would say that. Otherwise, no one would buy the books on parenting.
You said so yourself. Kids pick up behavior from their parents.
Only what's left over after the genes had done their work, said Jean. Let me give you an example from a field in which I have some expertise. Your wife is of Italian extraction.
Grandparents. She was born here.
Perfect. Italian genes. American upbringing. Now, I'm going to predict that she has a histrionic personality. A bit loud, a bit flamboyant, a bit of an actress. Panics under pressure, hysterical in an emergency.
Dave didn't say anything.
Ask a psychologist about cultural stereotypes and they'll tell you it's all nurture, said Jean.
Culture.
Correct, I said. Evolution of behavioral traits is far slower than the formation of geographic groups. Except for selective breeding. A certain trait becomes sexually attractive for genetic or cultural reasons, doesn't matter which, and people with that trait breed more. Italian men love histrionic women. Ergo, the histrionic gene takes over. Your wife's personality was programmed before she was born.
Dave shook his head.
You couldn't be more wrong. Sonia's an accountant. Completely level-headed.
I don't think I can do this. It isn't making sense. It's the opposite of what I told her before.
Sonia was becoming increasingly agitated as our appointment with Lydia approached. She seemed to be having difficulty discarding her own personality.
It's simple. You need to say you made an error, that you don't want any help. You think she's going to believe that? Said Sonia.
It's the truth, assuming you're Rosie.
If you knew how desperate I am for Dave to just take an interest... 5 years we tried, and now it's like he doesn't want it.
Possibly he's too busy working, providing financial support.
You know something? On their deathbed, nobody ever wishes they spend more time at the office.
It was difficult to see how Sonia's statement contributed to the discussion. Dave was not dying, nor did he work in an office. I brought the conversation back on track. As you caused the problem last time, and since I'm more familiar with Rosie's position, I propose that I provide the necessary information to Lydia and you merely confirm its accuracy.
Oh, I don't want to be too passive or she'll think you're oppressing me. She's already got it in her head that I'm some sort of peasant girl.
It seemed a reasonable conclusion on Lydia's part, given the dress and the accent.
Today, Sonia was wearing a conventional suit as she'd come from work. It struck me as equally uncharacteristic of medical students. Excellent point. Probably you should be like Rosie, angry that I tried to control her. Rosie was angry? Now that I had said the word, I realized it was true. I did not need to be an expert at interpreting body language to realize that fuck people telling me what to eat was an aggressive statement. Correct. Are you two okay? Of course. The answer was accurate, assuming that I was employing the word okay in the way that it would be used to describe a meal or a performance. The play was okay, not great. I assessed Rosie's current level of satisfaction with me as not great.
I'll do my best, Don. But if you're talking to Dave, can you let him know that I'm not like Rosie? Maybe give him your book, or if you don't need it anymore, I'd love for him to come home early and make me vegetable curry.
The session with Lydia did not go as planned. I was only 5 items into my detailed list of events, enumerating instances of Rosie's refusing help, when she interrupted and addressed Sonia.
Why did you not want Don's advice?
No man is telling me what to do with my body.
Sonia said this calmly, but then paused and contorted her face in what I assume was an impression of anger, and hit the table with her fist.
Bastardos!
Lydia seemed surprised. I hope the surprise was at Sonia's actions and not her use of a Spanish word.
It sounds like you've had some bad experiences.
In the my village, there is much oppression by the patriarchy.
You came from a village in Italy?
Si. A small village, poco.
Sonia indicated the size of the village by holding her thumb and forefinger approximately 2 centimeters apart.
And has working in an IVF lab and studying at Columbia altered your view of man?
I don't want Don to tell me what to eat and how much to exercise and when to go to bed.
And that's what you feel he's been doing?
Si, that is not what I want.
I can quite understand. Lydia turned to me. Can you understand that, Don?
Totally. Rosie does not require my help. I did not point out that this had been my original position until Lydia had demanded that I interfere.
So, Rosie, last time we met, you seemed quite passionate about wanting some support from Don.
Now that I've experienced it, I've decided it's not such a good idea.
I can see why. Don, support isn't about telling Rosie what to do. If you want me to be blunt, the problem's with you. Instead of telling her how to be a mother, maybe you should be doing some preparation for being a supportive father.
Of course. The baby would have 2 parents, and I'd been focusing all my energies on optimizing the performance of one. I was amazed that I'd not seen the problem earlier. But as a scientist, I recognized that paradigm shifts appear obvious only in retrospect. Also, I'd been focused on doing whatever seemed necessary to prevent Lydia giving me an adverse report, under the assumption that there was no actual problem with me as a prospective parent. But recent criticisms from Rosie were evidence that Lydia's original judgment was correct. My respect for her had increased dramatically. I jumped to my feet.
Brilliant! Problem solved! I need to gain fatherhood skills!
Lydia maintained a professional level of calmness. She turned to Sonia.
How do you feel about that? Do you think Don understands what's required?
Sonia nodded. I'm very happy. I'm happy for all the things he taught me about pregnancy because I am too busy with the study. But now I'll make sure he is thinking only about being a papa.
Lydia picked up the police file that had been sitting on the desk and smiled.
Well, she said, our time is up. Assisting with your parenting was never the official purpose of these sessions, and in that respect, you're going to be picked up by the Good Fathers program. I'll be getting a report from them.
This was the men's group that she had referred me to at our first meeting to assess my propensity for violence. The program I had booked was still 7 weeks in the future. She waived the police file.
But as far as parenthood is concerned, if the two of you can keep reminding each other what you've said today...
Excellent, I said. A highly productive session. I'll book the next available slot.
She was going to let you off, said Sonia.
I suspected that, but what she said was so useful.
She's still got the police file. Couldn't you find another therapist?
A significant percentage of professionals are incompetent, and she is familiar with us now. Us, you and Rosie, the Italian peasant. It doesn't matter. Her insight was incredible. She solved the problem.
Chapter 20. In retrospect, I had been on the correct path when I observed the children at the playground. Had I not have been interrupted and sidetracked by a legal technicality, I would have gained the required background on fatherhood, which I now realized was where my attention should be focused. Recent experience had suggested that I could not ignore the pre-birth stage. Sonia was herself an example of a woman who was unsatisfied with her partner's level of involvement in the pregnancy phase. After some reflection, I decided that there were at least four areas for action and skill development that did not involve interfering with Rosie's autonomy. 1. Acquisition of expertise in dealing with very young children. The book was clear that men should develop skills in baby management to provide respite for their partner. Although Rosie had been dismissive of my role as carer, the book and Sonia and Lydia presented a strongly opposing view. 2. Equipment acquisition, including environment preparation. The baby would require protection from sharp objects, poisonous substances, alcohol fumes, and band practice. 3. Acquisition of expertise in obstetric observations and procedures. The book was insistent on the importance of regular medical appointments. Rosie was disorganized in this area and over-reliant on her own medical expertise. Also, there was the possibility of some sort of emergency. 4. A non-intrusive approach to the nutrition problem. I did not trust Rosie to maintain a diet within the guidelines. Her ordering of the meat lover's pizza suggested that factors other than rational analysis were influencing her choices. The final item was the easiest. Rosie had implicitly agreed to the list of banned substances. I would make the conservative assumption that food purchased by Rosie outside the apartment had zero nutritional value and design our meals to include all the prescribed nutrients in appropriate proportions. I would vary the detail of the standardized meal system, pregnancy version, by choosing different fish varieties and green vegetables, thus hiding its underlying structure from Rosie. It would be simpler now that she was a meat eater. She had also entered the second trimester of the pregnancy where the risk of damage to bud by toxins that she might ingest from her unsupervised meals had lessened. The hard work had been done, at some cost to our relationship, but I could now relax a little. Things were looking much more positive. Rosie was back at university for the fall semester. She made a tutorial on the Saturday morning and told me that, having made the journey to Columbia, she would spend the remainder of the day there. I began my solo day by drawing a 1-to-1 scale, apple-sized bud on tile 15. The book noted that Bud's ears had migrated from his neck to his head and his eyes to the middle. It would have been fascinating to discuss with Rosie, but she was not present. And I had not forgotten her admonition about providing technical commentary. The obvious starting point for the equipment acquisition project was a pram. All babies require prams, and I considered myself better qualified than Rosie to select mechanical items. My bicycle represented the result of a 3-month evaluation process, culminating in the selection of the appropriate base model plus a list of modifications. I expected the experience to be largely transferable. At the end of a fulfilling day, interrupted only by food purchasing, lunch, and essential bodily functions, my internet-based investigation had produced a set of requirements for the ideal pram and a shortlist of available models, none perfect, but all potentially viable after some modification. I had a satisfying sense of making progress, but decided not to share this with Rosie. It could be another surprise. There was a second item of equipment which was more critical, at least in terms of the lead time required for thinking and implementation. Rosie had identified the problem of noise from upstairs. However, I had not informed her of the exact agreement with George, which allowed for unlimited music practice at all hours. The Skype call came through on schedule at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 9 a.m. Sunday Australian Eastern Standard Time.
"How's the weather there, Donald?" said my mother.
"Minimal change from last week. Still summer. The weather is normal for late August."
"What's that in the background? Are you in the toilet? You can call me back when you're finished."
This is my office. It's very private. Rosie was home, and I did not want her listening while I worked on the second surprise.
I should hope so. How was your week?
Fine.
You're well?
Fine.
And Rosie?
Fine. If we were using only text messages, I could have replaced myself with a simple computer application, the Fine application. Possibly it would be better than I was at
interspersing the occasional good and very well. But this evening slash morning, a variation was required. I need to speak to Dad.
You want to speak to your father?
The speech quality was excellent, fine, but my mother no doubt wanted to confirm the unusual request.
Is everything all right?
Of course, I have a technical problem.
I'll get him.
Rather than getting him, my mother shouted, Jim, it's Donald. He has a problem. My father does not waste time with formalities. What's the problem, Don?
I require a soundproof crib.
Although earplugs provided a simple solution, it had occurred to me that insulating a baby from sound might affect its development in a negative way. Interesting. I suppose breathing is the problem. Correct. Communication is solvable electronically. No need to tell me things we both know. But I'm struggling to imagine a soundproof material that air can pass through.
I've done some research. There is a project in Korea.
You mean South Korea? Correct. They've developed a material impermeable to sound, but permeable to air. I presume it's on the internet. Send your mother a link. You've given me enough to work on for now. I'll get your mother back. Adele?
My mother's face appeared in front of my father's. What was that about?
Don wants some help designing a crib.
A crib? A baby crib? Baby crib seemed to be a tautology. My father pointed this out to my mother.
I don't care, she said. Donald, is this for a friend?
No, it's for Rosie's baby, our baby. It requires protection from noise but needs to breathe.
My mother immediately became hysterical. I should have told her earlier. Of course it was relevant. For God's sake, we speak every Sunday. When is it due? Your aunt would be excited. Is Rosie all right? I hope it's a girl. I don't mean that. It just came out. I was thinking of Rosie. Girls are easier. Do you know what it's going to be? Isn't it amazing what they can do these days? Vast numbers of questions and observations that eventually occupied an additional 8 minutes beyond the time I'd scheduled for the discussion with my father. I have learned that tears do not necessarily equate to sadness, and despite my mother being understandably disappointed that we were in New York rather than Melbourne or Shepparton, she seemed pleased with the situation. I spent almost 2 weeks with Dewhurst's textbook of obstetrics and gynecology, 8th edition, and looking at videos available on the internet before deciding that these materials needed to be supplemented with practical experience. It was like reading a book on karate, useful to a point, but not sufficient for combat preparation. Fortunately, as a member of the medical faculty, I was in a position to gain access to hospitals and clinics. I booked a meeting with David Borenstein in his office. I'd like to deliver a baby. The dean's expression was difficult to interpret, but enthusiastic was not one of the options. Don, when I hired you, I expected some strange requests. So instead of me telling you all the practical and legal reasons why you can't deliver a baby, how about you tell me why you want to do it? I began to explain the need to be ready for any emergency, but the dean interrupted, laughing. Let me put it like this. The odds of you having to deliver this baby in Manhattan without assistance are quite a bit lower than the odds of you having to do a competent job of raising it once it's born, which are 100%. You agree? Of course. I have a separate sub-project, I'm sure you do. And you've just planted a seed in my mind. How's Inga doing? How long has she been with you now?
11 weeks and 2 days. She'd started on the day of the playground incident, the day that led to my second meeting with Lydia, the recruitment of Sonia as an actress, and my obligation to attend a group for violent men, the day the secrets began.
How is she doing?
She's highly competent. She's made a significant change to my default position on research assistance.
So maybe it's time to give you something different to do.
You have another genetics project?
Not exactly. I didn't bring you here because you're a mouse liver expert or even a genetics expert. I brought you here because you're a scientist I can trust to care only about science.
Of course.
Not of course. 90% of scientists have some sort of agenda, whether it's proving something they believe already or getting funding or a promotion or their name on a paper. These guys are no exception.
Which guys?
The guys I want you to work with. They're looking at attachment-related hormones and different modes of synchrony with mothers and fathers.
I know zero about this. I don't even understand the title. I did recognize the word attachment and remembered Jean's advice to run a mile, but I let David continue. That's fine. The underlying question is, does a baby benefit from having a parent of each gender as opposed to one parent only or two women or two men? What do you think, Don? I still know zero about the topic. How can I have an opinion? And that's why I want you to take the medical school seat on the project. To make sure that the research design and whatever comes out of it are as free of prejudice as you are. He smiled. And you'll get to play with some babies. The dean did not even make an appointment. We walked immediately to the New York Institute of Attachment and Childhood Development, located four blocks from the dean's office, where we were greeted by three women. Bryony, Bridget, and Belinda. I'd like you to meet Professor Don Tillman. The B team, I said, making a small joke. Nobody laughed. It was an encouraging sign that they were not inclined to over-recognize patterns, but I mentally registered them as B1, B2, and B3. I had been assigned to the project to provide objectivity, and it was important to avoid forming personal relationships with the other researchers. Don's one of my people, the dean continued. He's a committed Catholic and a passionate Tea Party supporter. I hope you're kidding me, said B1. This project has had enough. I'm kidding, said David. But it shouldn't matter. I said Don is one of my people. His personal philosophy won't affect his judgment. They're inseparable. But we won't have that argument now. If that's what you want, you could have sent us a computer, B1 again. She appeared to be the team leader. Don's not so easy to shut down, as I think you'll discover. You know this is an all-woman project, with substantial finance from the Women Working for Women Foundation. Was an all-women project, said the dean. Don, as you can see, changes the picture. I believe the funding is contingent on the College of Medicine and Surgery approving the research design and the analysis. I can't imagine there are any gender restrictions placed on our nominee. I'm sure that would have been considered most inappropriate. I want Don to do whatever he needs to do to ensure the work is scientifically bulletproof, which is in everybody's interest. Is he approved for working with children? Said B1. Aren't there mothers with them all the time? I'm assuming the answer is no. He'll need a clearance, which I imagine will take some time. B1 looked at me for approximately 7 seconds. What do you think of two women raising a child? In a scientific setting, I considered her question equivalent to asking, what do you think of potassium? I don't have any relevant knowledge. It's outside my field. She turned to the dean. You didn't think some appreciation of family models was relevant? I'd have thought your team had that well covered. I chose Don because he'll offer something that you might have a need for. And that would be? The question was addressed to me. Scientific rigor, I said. Oh, she said. Well, we can certainly use that, just being psychologists and all. She examined me again, another 7 seconds. Do you have any gay friends? I was about to tell her that I didn't, as a result of having only 7 friends, including George, rather than because of any prejudice about sexual orientation, but the dean interrupted. I'll leave you to your networking. I'll organize a police clearance for Don. I can't imagine any problems. The Lesbian Mothers Project was vastly more interesting than the genetic factors influencing vulnerability to cirrhosis of the liver in mice, which had been the focus of my research for the past 6 years. The stimulus for it was an Israeli study that had observed different responses to male and female parents. Babies' oxytocin levels rose during cuddling by the mother, but not by the father, and during active play with the father, but not with the mother. Very interesting. But it appeared that the motivation for the project was a newspaper article titled, "Research Proves Kids Need a Mum and a Dad." Someone had written the word crap in red beside the article. It was an excellent start. Scientists need to cultivate a suspicious attitude to research. My reading of the original paper provided no indication that the research was crap. The newspaper article offered a typically inexact interpretation, but its broad argument that fathers and mothers had different impacts on babies was supported by the published results. The original study had involved only heterosexual couples. The B team would examine lesbian couples. Their hypothesis was that the secondary carer playing with the child would cause the same oxytocin response as the father,
It all seemed straightforward, and I wondered why the dean had bothered to involve me. But observing the actual research would provide the perfect background for fatherhood, provided I considered myself equivalent to a lesbian secondary carer. The research itself would clarify whether that identification was valid. The only problem was the police check, which the dean was arranging. To the risk of prosecution and deportation, I could now add a third consequence of professional disgrace if Lydia gave me an adverse report. I assumed Rosie would be interested in the Lesbian Mothers Project and impressed that I was acquiring knowledge of babies and parenting. After a week of intense familiarization, time shared with ongoing reading on obstetrics, I was ready to discuss it with some authority. I planned to introduce the topic at dinner. Rosie was now spending so much time on her medical study and thesis that meals and morning subway rides were becoming our only time together, with the exception of bed. Jean and I had drunk half the bottle of wine before Rosie joined us at the table. She had a glass in her hand.
"Sorry, guys. Had to finish what I was doing or I'd have lost the thread."
She poured a half glass of wine for herself.
"I need an hour of being human."
"I've just started a new research project," I said. "The basis is a paper by..."
"Don, can we not talk genetics right now? I just need to chill for a bit."
"Oh, it's not genetics. It's psychology."
"What are you talking about?"
"I've been added to a psychology research team to provide scientific rigor."
"Because the psychologists aren't up to it," said Rosie.
Jean had screwed his face up and was making small but rapid shaking movements of his head.
"Correct," I said. "Great," said Rosie. "I should be getting some rigor into my thesis instead of wasting time drinking wine with my husband and my supervisor."
She took her glass into her study. "You're invading her territory, Don, not for the first time," said Jean after Rosie closed the door. "How can we have interesting discussions if we don't identify common domains?"
"I don't know, Don, but Rosie is not fond of geneticists telling psychologists what to do. Case in point, me. Second case in point, you."
I explained how the Lesbian Mothers Project would provide me with valuable knowledge relevant to parenthood.
"Good work," said Jean. "You can tell her how to do motherhood as well as psychology."
He put his hands up in dual stop signs.
"I'm being sarcastic. You do not want to tell her how to be a mother."
"If you learn something from the project, wonderful. But surprise her with your skills rather than beating her over the head with your knowledge." Jean recommended that I not raise the topic of the Lesbian Mothers Project again. Chapter 21. The Good Fathers program was scheduled for Wednesday, 9th of October, on the Upper West Side. As with the paedophile assessment, I was astonished at how long it had taken to deliver support to a potentially dangerous person. I told Rosie that I had organized a boys' night out and, in the interests of minimizing deception, called Dave and invited him to participate. Jean was having dinner with Inga.
"I ought to catch up on some work," Dave said.
"I got a pile of paperwork this high."
Obviously, I was unable to see whatever signals Dave was making to indicate the height of the pile, but I had a strong argument.
"I recommend you do something baby-related," I said. "Sonia is unimpressed by your lack of interest. She considers it a result of your focus on work, which you are currently demonstrating."
"She told you that? When?"
"I don't remember."
"Don, there are a lot of things you do, but forgetting isn't one of them."
"We had coffee."
"She never told me."
"You probably failed to ask or were too busy with work. I'll meet you at 42nd Street, A train, uptown platform at 6:47 p.m. and we can attend together. I've estimated 13 minutes for travel to the venue."
I figured.
The class was held in a room attached to a church. Dave and I were joined by 14 other men, including the convener, age approximately 55, estimated BMI 28. Appearance notable for the combination of frontal baldness and very long hair, plus a beard. The evening was warm, and he was wearing a t-shirt that made it apparent he had invested heavily in tattoos. He introduced himself to the class as Jack, and explained that he'd been a member of a motorcycle club, had spent time in jail, and at one time had a bad attitude to women. It was quite a long speech, but omitted some important information. I assumed he was being modest. When he asked if anyone had questions, I raised my hand.
"What are your professional qualifications?"
He laughed.
"The University of Life, the School of Hard Knocks."
I would have liked more information as to the disciplines, but did not want to dominate question time. As it turned out, nobody else asked anything, and it was our turn to introduce ourselves. Everyone provided only their names. Due to mumbling, Jack had to ask several times for a name to be repeated before he could match it on his list. When Dave's turn came, Jack shook his head.
You're not on my list. Don't worry. They screw this up all the time. Spell your name for me, slowly.
Dave provided the information.
Bechler. Yugoslavian. Serbo-Croatian, I think, way back. We get quite a few Serbs, something in the genes. Not that I want to encourage stereotypes. Any other Serbs here?
No hands went up.
Your wife's pregnant.
Yes.
Who told you to come here?
Dave indicated me. Jack looked at me for a few moments.
You're his buddy.
Correct.
You brought him along because you thought it'd be good for him.
Correct.
Smart move, Don. If we all looked after our buddies like Don here, there'd be a lot less mothers showing up at the emergency room, a lot less babies shaken to death by men who won't ever be able to look at themselves in the mirror again.
Dave appeared more shaken than the hypothetical baby.
Now, said Jack, everybody's here for a reason, including Dave. You've all done something to someone that you probably regret. I want to hear about it. I want to know how you feel about it now. Who's first?
There was silence. Jack turned to Dave.
Dave, you look like...
I interrupted. I needed to save Dave from being revealed as a non-violent imposter. I'm willing to commence.
All right, Don. Tell us what you've done.
Which incident?
Sounds like there's been a few.
Few was accurate. There had been three in my adult life, but the frequency had increased recently. Correct. Two in the past month, prompted by the pregnancy.
That's not good, Don. Maybe they're a bit raw to think about now. Maybe go back a little. To an incident you've had time to do some thinking about. You understand what I'm saying?
Of course. You're suggesting that analysis of recent events may lack a broader context and be clouded by emotions.
Yeah, that. So, go back a bit.
I was at a restaurant. My costume was criticized. There was an altercation which escalated, and two security personnel attempted to restrain me. I responded with the minimum force needed to disable them. One of the other men interrupted.
You took out two bouncers? You're an Aussie, right?
This was another student.
You took out two Aussie bouncers?
Correct and correct. I disabled them in self-defense.
Two guys dissies threads and bam, 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 bam.
The student performed a punching action in time with his bams. No bamming was required. I used a low-impact throw and a simple hold.
Judo.
Aikido. I'm also proficient in karate, but the Aikido is safer in these situations. I used Aikido on the neighbor who damaged my clothing.
Do not mess with this man's threads.
The student was laughing. And on the police officer.
You threw a cop? Not here in New York. Where was his partner?
Jack interrupted.
I guess there were consequences for Don. Whoever won the fight, you got arrested, right?
Correct.
And then?
Total disaster. Threat of criminal prosecution, deportation, lack of access to my child, restrictions on working with children, forced attendance, and the necessity of deceiving my wife, which is incredibly stressful and has unpredictable consequences.
You were too ashamed to tell your wife what you'd done, right? That you got yourself into trouble again.
I nodded, although my justification for not telling Rosie had been to protect her from stress. There was some truth in Jack's observation. Jack addressed the group.
Doesn't sound so clever now, does it? We all get angry and we fuck up. Why? What makes us angry?
Again, nobody raised his hand. I could empathize with Jack. It was like the first class of the semester with new students. As a fellow teacher, it was my responsibility to help Jack out. To understand anger, I began, it is necessary first to understand aggression and its evolutionary value. I continued for approximately a minute. I had not even begun to explain the consequent evolution and internalization of anger as an emotion when Jack stopped me.
That'll do for now, Professor.
The use of the formal title was encouraging. I was surely the top student at this point, and I could not see any challenges.
We're going to take a break.
and afterwards I'm going to be looking for some contributions from the rest of you. Don, you've earned your gold star and you can shut the fuck up.
Everyone laughed. I was the class clown again. Most of the students